is a company man, your right hand, 13 years and counting. No detectable ambition, a model of efficiency, far as you can see. He knows every loophole, the art of fine print, massages the numbers till they fit. And every time you ask him for another vanishing act, he half smiles as if to say, whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want is fine by me. Whatever you want is fine by me. Never a real moment together, but she understands you're an important man. Another late night, don't know if you're coming home or when, she's alone again, but she goes on curating your domestic museum. She disappears in her loyalty. She is a dress wearing a face in the doorway, opening her arms out to you. Whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want is fine by me. Oh, whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want is fine by me.
So after Dreaming Through the Noise, you had a new record label there, the Zoe Rounder, is that correct?
Yeah, so I started out on a small independent label started by this one guy, Michael Tarlow. So I released two albums with him. Decided I would try being part of the roster of a slightly bigger label, so I went over to Rounder, their Zoe imprint, and released two albums there.
Did you have to make any connections to get to that label? Because I've seen there was a few really well-known singer-songwriters on that label. Was it hard to get noticed by them at all?
Well, around the time that I was starting to write my third album, Dreaming Through the Noise, I think we'd started conversations with Rounder, and they were the most, obviously they had a roster that kind of was a dream to belong to.
Right.
Some really, really great folks, and a lot of storied history behind the label generally. And I think that, you know, in talking to different labels, they were definitely the ones that kind of understood what I was trying to do the most, and it felt like the most supportive home for me. So it worked on a number of levels, which was great.
Okay, awesome. And then you released another album, The Inland Territory, which is another beautiful record.
Thank you.
Yeah, around that time you announced to your friends in 2010 that you were actually going back to school.
Right.
That was true. What made you decide to go back to school, like, right at that moment?
Well, there were a lot of different reasons. One was that I'd always planned to. I've always been a bit of a nerd and an academic, just a fan of the academic world. So I had always known that at some point I would love to go back and, you know, study things. And in particular, I'd wanted to go back and study sustainability, like right. The intersection of business and the environment. And I'd sort of been kind of an armchair enthusiast of it as a touring musician and tried to do a few projects here and there. But increasingly, I just felt like I really want to delve into this and spend a few years just really being a student of it and understanding what can my contribution be here. And along with that, and I don't think I fully realized this until I was back in school, my relationship with music had gotten a little, I kind of like reached this plateau and I wasn't really sure what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a way going back to school allowed me to like buy some time to really figure out what was going on there. In retrospect, I think what I realized is that in a way, like if you can think of me as being married to music, that my marriage had gotten to that kind of tired place where, you know, like we're not fighting and we're not going to get divorced, but you know, we're just kind of like doing the dishes and taking out the trash, sleeping on our each on our sides of the bed, right? So
I like that. I like that comparison. It's great. But your next album in 2013 was Aims. But where did you get the title for that one?
Album titles are always kind of the last thing to arrive for me when I'm putting an album out.
Right.
And I think after I had looked at the whole collection of songs and realized that there was this interesting combination of idealism and ambition to kind of stretch myself beyond what I'd tried to do before musically, but also this sort of kind of anxiety that was kind of built into it too, around like, what do you do? What can you do that's meaningful in a world that's kind of beset with so many different challenges? How do you find the grace of accepting that uncertainty, of not really knowing like whether your life is going to be meaningful, if you're going to make a difference? So I think I wanted to pick a name that was both distinct, but also had some kind of power and hopefulness to it. And that was also why I chose the album cover to be a map of Detroit, but kind of a disguised map of Detroit. That's where I live now. To me, the city embodies so many different things for me, but among them, the ability to dream and to have aspirations and to like really put your, you know, roll up your sleeves and do stuff to try and bring that dream about, even in the face of really daunting odds. So that's part of the reason why I really like living here. Yeah, we got the news. 500 miles and we're gonna make it all the way. We got nothing to lose. We got nothing to lose. Been 10 years waiting, but it's better late than ever we've been told before. We can't wait 1 minute more. Sat down in the rain and fall. Oh, 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 me and my baby stand in line. You never seen a sight so fine as the love that's gonna shine at City
Hall. Yeah, listening to that album, I was really blown away by everything, because it was so different from really anything you kind of put out before then.
Right.
Which I thought that was so cool. Since I got the confirmation that you would do this interview, I really sat down to listen to the album. I was listening to it in all these different types of headphones, and it's just the production, it's phenomenal on it. Was there like an inspiration other than just trying to kind of break out of the mold that you felt like you were in for music? Was there like, you were listening to a particular artist? For me, I hear a lot of like inspiration from top 40 from the album. Was that any sort of inspiration for you?
Yeah, I think that I had been listening to a bit more hip-hop than I had before,
okay,
for sure. And pop music, too, definitely, like Foster the People and Adele and a bunch of other cool
stuff. I hear
that.
I absolutely
right
hear that, yeah.
Yeah, and also I think that I also wanted to team up with this producer, Kason Cooley, out of Nashville, who is definitely responsible for a lot of the, you know, the production brilliance.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Records. So I'm glad that you're hearing it. He also has a really kind of deep, complex pop sensibility, and we would just, you know, shamelessly like have a Spotify playlist running whenever we were working in the studio, and whenever we kind of were talking about something, we would use the shorthand of like, well, you know, it's sort of like this one moment in that Beck track, you know, off of you know, Sea Change, or you know, we call it something else, and he really turned me on to a lot more hip hop as well, like just because I'm so clueless about hip hop when it's totally honest. And so he's like, oh yeah, you need to listen to some like the older Jay-Z stuff. Like, it's amazing. And so, you know, we would just go back to, you know, go in a time machine of sorts.
That's good.
So I think a lot of it is influenced by both spending time with and being more interested in a world of people who just like fully embrace top 40 pop music and, you know, all the different kinds of remixing and reimagining you can do with that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you were recording it, obviously a lot of the sounds can't be easily reproduced live. Were you worried about that in the back of your head? Like, I'm going to have to go present this to the world in a live setting. How am I going to kind of make up for it?
Yeah, for better or worse, I don't think ahead in that way. I probably should. Because we did finish the album and I thought, oh boy, I don't know how I'm going to tour with this, like, especially as a solo artist.
Right.
I didn't really thought ahead to that at all. But fortunately, I was able to bring a trio on the road for that release tour, and got two musicians who are just really adept at both acoustic and kind of electronic instruments, and figuring out how to meld those into a really interesting kind of tapestry. So yeah,
okay.
I felt really lucky to tour with them. It was great.
Yeah, and was this about the longest time? Did this album take longer than usual to? Then compared to your other albums to create, or was it just took the same amount of time?
I think it took around the same amount of time. It might have been even shorter.
Oh, really? Okay.
Some of the other processes. And honestly, that's partly because of the technological aspect of it. A lot of the sounds on the album are either samples or they're electronically generated. So a lot of times it would just be me and Casey in the studio dragging little things around, on the screen, or playing parts on a keyboard and then manipulating them to have different sounds or attach different effects to them. So a lot of it was just kind of carving different soundscapes out of in these.
Okay.
With these electronic instruments, so you can actually work much more quickly that way.
Okay.
Then obviously like bringing in lots of studio musicians and then figuring out exactly what you want them to play and kind of having that collaborative process.
Okay.
Which has its own merits, obviously, for sure.
Oh, but absolutely. Yeah.
It can go quicker when it's just you and a computer.
Yeah. Did you... also, I think it was the Ames album that you went to a haunted house to record an out-of-tune piano. Was it this album?
Oh, that was actually Inland Territory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Inland Territory was a fun journey, too, because it was originally, that album was originally conceived as three different EPs, song cycles, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And so each one kind of had its own mood, and that one was the one where we wanted to record each of the songs in a particular space that had its own story to tell. And yeah, so there was one where we actually put the word out on social networks to say, like, does anyone have a haunted house with a piano?
Was it legitimately haunted, or was there any history behind it, or was it just a creepy house?
Well, the family there did swear up and down that it was haunted by their old pets. So in a very benign kind of way, they're like, we have definitely seen our old dog who passed away 7 years ago, appear in that doorway, that kind of thing. So at least the kind of ghost that we wouldn't be too worried about capturing on tape.
Okay, and then another really cool thing you did with this album was you did a Kickstarter. And I'm a huge fan of the Kickstarters. I love seeing all of the rewards and seeing if someone can actually fund the project. You did it, and it went quicker than you expected. But did you have any doubt when you were forming the whole campaign that you couldn't meet your goal? Was there ever
a
doubt?
Yeah. I definitely tried to do my research around crowdfunding, and I had done one kind of in conjunction with a playwright that I was writing a musical with.
Uh-huh.
And so I tried to, at least take some lessons from what other people had done. And I definitely heard that, you get some interest in the beginning, but then there's this whole lull in the middle where, no one's donating until they realize that, you might not make your goal unless everyone scrambles at the last minute. So then there's going to be this last-minute scramble, which will really stress you out. It's kind of what I'd heard. So I was trying to prepare for that and trying to figure out, how do I get, commitments ahead of time to make sure that, there are enough people to come through on this, and what kind of pleas will I make at different points, if we're really looking behind. So yeah, definitely, I was not expecting it to be funded in 5 hours or anything close to it. I was pretty sure I was going to have to beg and plead people near the end.
Did you have a backup plan? Was the video just going to be canceled if you didn't make it, or was there some other idea you had?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't the only way for me to get a video funded.
Mm-hmm.
And So I definitely wasn't doing it primarily because I needed the money. It was more because I felt like this is a project that makes a lot of sense for me to act, for me to, you know, do it as a crowdfunded project. Because the song is about doing things collectively and the power of not, you know, realizing you don't have to be alone in anything that you're trying to do. It also felt like a really good moment for me to, you know, reach out to my audience and my, you know, network of music lovers and see, like, are you interested in doing this video with me and, like, how it would all play out. So, yeah, I guess the short answer is I did have a backup plan and that, like, I had other ways to get it funded. It was definitely something that for the nature of the project, I really wanted to do it this way. So I was really hoping it would succeed.
And you did. You did much more than exceed on that one. Where did you get?
I should give, you know, in full transparency, I should give an epilogue to that too, which is that I'm still working on fulfilling the rewards. Well, you know, almost coming up on a year and a half later. So definitely, it's something that, you know, I'm personally responsible for sure.
Right.
There are times when just other parts of my life take over.
Right. Understandable.
But it's also a good reminder to me and to other folks out there. I think that, you know, you're going to earn every contribution that people make,
right?
That it's not like free money that comes pouring in from all corners. That you definitely give back as you, or hopefully you will give back as much as you're receiving.
Yeah. Well, one of the prizes or one of the rewards was that you would record a cover song of the buyer's choice. Did you have any interesting cover requests?
Yeah, I'm actually working on one today. someone requested a Metallica cover, so I'm trying to figure out.
That would be very interesting.
I figured, you know, I've learned the guitar solos, but I don't know how, you know, how I'm actually going to do them in a way that doesn't sound totally ridiculous. So, yeah, there have definitely been some fun challenges.
Okay.
And I think, yeah, there was somebody who asked me to cover Wham's Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
That's so catchy.
Yeah, once I played it for my family and friends, apparently it's gone stuck in everyone's head. And I'm like, who knew that, like, hits from the 80s would come back to haunt us?
Yes. And also you had Spend a Day With You. That sold. Where did you end up traveling for that one?
Yeah, there have been some really fun ones. I actually, what sparked my tour to Asia last year was because there was an Australian backer who wanted me to come visit in Sydney.
Wow.
I figured, well, while I'm over there, I might as well play some shows, and that turned into touring in Asia, elsewhere in Asia as well. I got to do that. I got to play, you know, have a day of playing badminton and going to the movies, and then having a really fun, like, Japanese dinner with this other backer, just in California over the holidays. And then the other two are actually still in progress. I am going to end up in the Bermudas at some point, and also going to hopefully end up either skiing in Colorado or hanging out in D.C. with another backer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that Kickstarter has to be one of the most generous ones I've ever seen. You really went all out with those ones.
Yeah, it's definitely been a good learning process. I'm really glad I did it. And I also now know just, like, budget in about 5 times as much time as you think it's going to take.
Would you ever do
make good on all your promises.
Right, right. Yeah, would you ever do the crowdsourcing thing again?
Definitely, yeah. Uh-huh. And I would do it in a way, you know, where I was much more aware of what I was taking on. But it's been so much fun.
Yeah.
It's been really great to have this channel to, you know, connect with individual people through music. You know, I did a whole series where I would, you know, call somebody and talk to them for a while.
Right.
And so some people would get them for their friends, and just all those conversations of, like, people who happen to listen to my music, among other things, and then just finding out all the amazing things they're doing with their own lives and where they've traveled and what's meaningful to them and who, you know, who's changed their life and all of that. And just getting these glimpses into other human beings' lives has been pretty amazing.
Okay. Yeah, and then the video was Level Up. It's kind of a very extravagant video. When I was really surprised that with that budget, like, you could do such this ginormous video. Is absolutely beautiful. Do you like the whole process of making a music video?
I do, and it's an interesting place because I think when I'm making an album, it's important to me to be in the driver's seat as much as a producer is. And in the case of a music video, it's much less so. I feel like I'm bringing something to the process, but in a way it's much more the director's vision. And in this case, it really was, like, Lawrence Chen and his whole team came came up with this concept inspired by the song, but it really was entirely their vision of like how they wanted to do it.
Okay.
Like Lawrence explained, he's like, I've always wanted to do one that was a continuous shot through different worlds.
Uh-huh.
And so then they built this entire elaborate set in which, you know, I start out in a bedroom and then end up on a street at night and then move into a doctor's office and then move, you know, into this other space all in one shot. And so that was really fun to, you know, participate in this
right.
whole other creative process of, you know, filmmaking, basically.
Right. Was this your like first official music video? I don't know if I saw another one, but
there actually is another one that I made a few years ago with another team of folks called. It was a music video for my song Gravity.
Okay.
And the offer came out of nowhere. Gravity is off my first album, so mm-hmm. the song has been out there for a few years already.
Right.
But this team sent me the beginnings of a music video and said, well, we shot this video just as, you know, to make part of our portfolio. We set it to your song. And the more we thought about it, the more we thought the song is actually perfect for the footage we're shooting. Wouldn't it be cool if the artist were in it? So it was a pretty great pitch. So like, we've made half your music video for you already. Like, do you want to be in it, the other half?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Level Up is technically my second one.
Okay. Whoa, how is dancing in the video?
Oh, man.
It's good dancing, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, thanks. I am not a dancer.
I read that.
You know, I'm not a trained dancer at all.
Uh-huh.
And so the funny story behind that is, while we were brainstorming different concepts for what this video could be, I remember Lawrence saying, yeah, just throw out ideas. Like, there's no bad idea at this stage. And so after having mentioned a couple of other things, I said, well, I've always had this fantasy that it would be really funny to make a video that is making fun of the fact that I can't dance and I'm very awkward. It would be funny if, like, it were this sexy video where I'm supposed to be sexy, but I keep falling over or something like that. Anyway, so I don't know if it works. I don't think it works for any of the, you know, concepts we're thinking of. But what he took away from that whole ramble was, we should make a music video where Vienna's dancing.
I love the whole choreographed end part. I was like, that's really... Because before I saw the video, I read the interview you did, and you said mm-hmm. you weren't a dancer. I was like, I wouldn't have known. I think you had... You probably have a hidden talent of dancing. So that's good.
Well, I do enjoy dancing. That's the truth. Like, when I'm at a dance party or a wedding, like uh-huh. I'm out there on the dance floor getting down because I love moving. It's really uh-huh. fun. But the idea of learning choreography and actually looking graceful were not things I've ever aspired to do on camera.
Right, right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of credit that goes to Jacqueline Walsh, who was a choreographer, and I think she really got a sense of like what I was capable of pulling off uh-huh. and really kind of built a lot of the moves around that, which
did she
very nice of her.
Did she do choreography for the other dancers as well?
Yes, except for Tommy Lee, who obviously like is... He's an amazing break dancer, and so they're like, yeah, at that point, you do your thing. Thank you.
Okay,
yeah, it's been pretty awesome to have it out there and see people respond to it.
Yeah. I've read the YouTube comments, and everyone, not only is the song amazing, the video's amazing, the lyrics are, oh gosh, you could put those to anything and it'd still be beautiful.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty pleased that the comments on that video have been this sort of island of civil and nice YouTube
yes.
comments.
That's a rarity in the YouTube
world. I know.
This is the same place. No, not the same place. This is the same place, love. No, not the same.
Well, I guess we'll focus on what's next. You said you have a full-time job now.
I do.
That is correct. Does that mean your music career won't be the forefront anymore, or more of a side job?
At the moment, it's something that I do here and there, you know, for a few weeks out of each year. I'm pretty glad that my current job has the flexibility for me to do that. So I will be touring in April.
I did see
and
that.
This summer, I'm actually undertaking this recording project where, so this playwright and I, Tanya Schaefer, she and I wrote a musical several years ago, and it debuted in 2013. It had its premiere performance in Berkeley, California. But she's always wanted to have a recording of the music, and so this summer, that's what we'll be doing, and I'll be singing one of the lead parts, which will...
Oh, really?
Kind of like dancing will always also be a stretch for me. theatrical style.
That would be so, so lovely. Well, is there going to... other than that, is there new music on the way, or is that still up in the air?
It's still very much up in the air. I find that put albums out, I think, on a slower schedule than a lot of other artists, and it takes a few years for me to kind of have this whole kind of realm of experiences and thoughts that I want to put in music form, and then I go into my kind of intensive writing phase. So I think right now I'm still in gathering phase.
Okay, okay. And you're traveling around the world. You've been traveling around the world for obviously your last few albums, but is there a place anywhere in the world that you want to go to but haven't yet?
Oh, definitely. I've only been to South America once. I've never been to Africa or the Middle East. Well, I guess I've been to Israel now, but yeah, there are lots of parts of the world that I haven't been to that I would love to go.
That's awesome. And you tend to do smaller shows, and I love that intimate setting. There was a video of you had the audience participating, like by, you know, jingling keys and crumping up paper. And I thought that was really good. But are there any venues anywhere, big venues or whatnot, that you would just dream about playing?
Oh, wow. Yeah, and I think it really runs the gamut. Like, on the one hand, I still do have this fantasy of, like, how cool would it be to play in an arena or a stadium, right? And, like, walk out on a stage to that size audience. Like, it must be a completely different experience. And at the same time, I also have a fantasy of forming, you know, in the living room of a house, but having it be this particular mood and this particular kind of, you know, vibe to that living room. And just playing to, like, you know, maybe 10 or 15 people. And I've done that on occasion, and I think that there's like kind of this one iconic, you know, magical living room house concert that I want to play that I haven't quite gotten to play yet. So I'm chasing that too.
Okay. And just a random question, but is there any embarrassing moments that you had on stage that you would be willing to share? What's the most embarrassing?
Well, you know, it's funny, because as part of my Kickstarter rewards, you know, we've been wanting to release these live performance videos. And so just recently I was reviewing them, which means that I have to review, like, the entire performance.
Right.
And there are times when I just get to talking, because I don't plan what I say between songs.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll just say stuff that, like, you know, watching it back, I'm like, oh, just please, just shut up and play the song. Just stop. Just stop now. And so one story that comes to mind is my bandmates make fun of me for this. I was in Amsterdam and, again, was just talking off the cuff and not really thinking ahead. I was thinking, like, well, we have a day off in Amsterdam. I would like to ask the audience about what we should do on our day off. Which then led to, oh, it would be really great to go to some nightclub and dance, which led to my thought of, oh, I hear there are a lot of great gay nightclubs that play great music here. But I didn't say all of that. What came out of my mouth on stage was, so we have a day off in Amsterdam, and I'm really interested in the gay clubs around here, so if anyone knows where the good gay clubs are, please let me know.
That's a good one. Did you get any response?
Yeah, there were some people who gave some, like, responses of where to go. But what was funny was that this was before intermission, so we came off stage at intermission. My band was like, do you just realize that you just unintentionally came out to all of Amsterdam?
Oh, like, my! I wasn't even thinking that when you said that.
And I'm not. I definitely identify as straight. So I'm like, oh no, that's not what I meant, though. Like, but then the second half of the show was apparently just this excruciating set of me, like, trying to set the record straight in, like, a totally unnecessary way. It's like, this next song, which is about a guy that I had a crush on, because, you know, that's the thing that I do.
Make it very obvious.
Yeah, and it was just apparently just painful for everybody.
Oh, gosh, that's a fun... I love that story.
Okay. So, I do that sort of thing a lot.
Okay, that's great. That's an amazing story.
day begins and it's all that we need.